Now, the Ionians also excelled in architecture, and they developed one of the major building styles known from antiquity, the Ionic order. Now, I think it's interesting, particularly in discussion with what we just talked about, of the interplay of foreign ideas upon the Greeks in Anatolia, to understand that the Ionic order essentially develops out of architectural forms from the East, from the Levant, that is Syro-Palestine, and even as far away as Babylon. The Ionic order is a form of architecture that is used chiefly in temples, as we'll see, and is most identifiable by the capitals on columns that look rather like a old-fashioned telephone receiver with curved volutes. But it's clear that these curved volutes come out of architectural styles that are native to Phoenicia, which is located in what is today Lebanon. And so, much like some of the philosophical ideas that might have been informed by foreigners, architectural forms also seem to have been influenced by outside regions. Now, during the middle of the 6th century BC in Ionia, huge temples were constructed using this architectural style in a number of cities. These temples tended to have numerous columns, more than you really need to hold up a roof, columns designed to celebrate the wonder of the temple. So these columns were not really necessary to hold up the roof of the building, but they seem to have been designed to celebrate the greatness of the structure. And in this sense, it's been thought that they may imitate multi-columned halls that are found in temples in Egypt. So that is to say, it's very possible that the design of the Ionic order, as well as the design of these early temples, are very much informed by outside influences, which just speaks to the richness of the experience of life in Western Anatolia for the Greeks who emigrated here. Let me talk just a little bit about two of the temples constructed during the 6th century BC. At Ephesus, that small 7th century temple that faced west that I mentioned a bit ago, where Artemis was worshipped together with Cybele, it was replaced in the middle of the 6th century BC by a gargantuan temple, still facing west, still celebrating Artemis and Cybele combined. The temple measured 180 by 377 feet, so well over a football field, and contained 127 60-foot columns, so a giant stone structure. And as we'll see, the people of Ionia were masters at manipulating giant stone blocks, in this case, marble. Now, at Miletus, you can imagine a city that created this great philosophical movement, a city that was at the heart of an extensive colonial system. The Milesians also built an enormous temple, one, though slightly smaller than the one at Ephesus. This temple was dedicated to the god Apollo, and it was constructed at a place called Didyma, a sanctuary to Apollo, connected to Miletus by a 10-mile paved road. Now, this temple was unique in that the cella, or inner chamber of the temple, was open to the air and surrounded by 100 columns, again, this multi-columned arrangement I've mentioned. Within the open-air cella was a spring sacred to Apollo and used in oracular prophecies where priests could drink the water and have contact with the god. And in front of the spring was a small inner temple that held a remarkable bronze statue of the god where Apollo held his bow in one arm and a deer in the other, and the deer's legs evidently moved independently. It was quite a remarkable statue. Now, this temple stood for only 40 years, and then, along with the city of Miletus, it was destroyed by the mighty invading army of the Persians. But this story will have to wait until Lecture 7, when I'm able to relate the sad demise of the city of Miletus.
This ends Lecture 5.